I do art and writing. Mostly poetry, sort of an emotional dumping ground.
Be myself. I'm crazy myself. I go out picking up bottles and cans. Basically, stay away from the real nutty people out here.
Pray to God, drink lots of coffee. I eat my beef jerky.
Drink.
I spend time being quiet, and I think about God. I process through what I'm going through by being quiet. I try and keep myself quiet and focused. I try and stay away from other people right now so that I can get focused, because there's a lot of drama and I don't need to be any more confused. Right now I open up the Bible and I read it and I want to see what it says. I want to have an understanding for who God is.
You have to, first of all, look towards God.
Well, I try to do the best I can.
Well, I have a daughter who helps me laugh. I play music with friends and on my own. And not infrequently, I get high.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of The Politics of Living. Thanks to our guests, as well as our contributors, Kristen Thiel, Anessa Anderson, Darka Dusty, and Liam Delta. Also, thanks to our technical editor, Liam Delta, and web manager, Vicky Mazzone. Thanks so much for listening to The Politics of Living. I'm Denise Kowalczyk. Have a great day.
It's 10 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, The Bike Show brings you news and views of cycling in Oregon and beyond. But to take us up to 10:15, we've got Air Cascadia coming right up after this announcement. It's KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, November 1st, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your resistance radio, your whistleblower radio, and of course your fake news radio. 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.FM everywhere. Apparently, our somewhat unhinged commander-in-chief has been frantically firing off early morning tweets. I still find it difficult to get myself to say the president is tweeting. I never thought I would say a sentence like that. I never thought that the two words president and tweet would really ever occur in the same sentence. But here we are in 2017, and the timing of these presidential tweets suggests that the man has been up for hours, if not perhaps all night, as have I, and you don't see me tweeting around here. That said, I do want to encourage people to take the time to understand the Russian, the Ukraine issues here, Paul Manafort, what he's been up to, and who some of his associates are. If you don't want to do the background work on it, let me just say this, that Paul Manafort has done business and continues to, as I understand it, with out-and-out mafia, Russian mafia members, and is involved with some people who have been linked to murders. He is indeed a dangerous guy, and and some of the crimes that he has committed and that have got him in this tight corner at the moment are similar to, or if not exactly the same, as crimes that the president himself committed in his role as the consummate real estate deal maker. I would guess that Paul Manafort is a better real estate dealer. If I wanted to do a huge money laundering, tax evasion type of a project, I would certainly turn to Paul Manafort before I turn to President Trump. Just saying, not that any of that would happen. That clearing that, just to clear the decks here, it is worth the effort to keep up with this. Anyone that thinks that that this Russian business is not important is very, very wrong. Because it could indeed lead to the impeachment of Trump and the presidency of Pence. And all of that suggests that these men, however egregious their behavior and however dangerous they are to the United States internally and to the nation's standing in the rest of the world, which is rapidly crumpling into a fetal position rather than a stunt. That said, we are possibly looking, whatever deep state operatives got Trump where he is today and can make him dance the way they're making him dance right now, well, it would suggest that they've got, that there is someone in the wings being groomed for the presidency who, unlike Trump, really is charismatic and really is a snake charmer and really can and entrance the entire nation rather than polarizing it. It's very, very likely. This is, as they say, this is just a test. If Trump really were the autocrat, the oligarch that he is presented as, if that's true, then the corollary, of course, is highly likely. We know that we have people groomed for this position, for other sorts of positions that are dangerous at a street level. So just saying. And now we have Karen Bernal, who is joining us to talk a little bit about something that it is very important to read. All of that just said leading up to the autopsy. The Democratic Party in crisis, and Karen Bernal is joining us. I will just like quickly, you know, she chairs one of the largest caucuses in the California Democratic Party. The Progressive Caucus in California, as we all know, is one of the largest trading blocks in the world. Good morning, Karen. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, the autopsy is out and one can read it. It's what, 35 pages? You have been one of the authors of that. What is it about the Democratic Party in crisis that compels us to look backwards and instead of letting it go and moving forward? What's stopping us? What do we need to learn from the autopsy before we are able to move ahead?
Well, the answer to what we need to do in the future lies first in thoroughly examining what happened in the past. And I think one of the things that the report says in the introduction is, after a train wreck, a thorough investigation takes place, what caused all these things, what kinds of improvements need to take place. And the one thing that we authors noted was that, unlike in prior presidential election cycles, when the party does a postmortem or an autopsy, which, by the way, yes, people can read into it, you know, it's about something dead, but it's also just the, it's common terminology that's used. Once something is over, there is a debrief, a post-mortem, an analysis of what took place, and the lessons learned and what they need to do going forward. And so we noted that the party hadn't done that for this past election, of all elections, and given its the weight and gravity of what occurred, if there was any election that called for one, it was this one. And so that's what we did. We feel that in order to come up with solutions, we have to have a clear-eyed assessment of what took place.
That said, is there at the same time as the re-examination and the analysis of the past election is going on, what building blocks have been formulated thus far going ahead? Is there, again, I'm curious about is the schedule for putting together a Democratic Party that is out ahead of events rather than playing catch up.
I'm sorry. Are you asking what we need to do to move ahead?
Yeah. At the same time as the analysis of the crisis of what happened is going on. What so far have you got as far as what have you got as building blocks moving forward?
I and the other authors are not the DNC or the party, but what we can tell you is that and I'm sorry about the noise in the background.
It's not a problem.
What we can tell you is that we need to number one, invest in greater outreach to communities of color, which the party did not dedicate any resources to in this last election cycle. And as it turned out, that what happened is that we had a drop in African American turnout in some key swing states that could have very much decided the election. And secondly, we know that there needs to be an embrace of an ideological and populist shift that is swinging to the left. We found statistically that there were among the under 30 votes that nationally about 8% voted for a third party candidate, and most troubling, in battleground states, that rate for the under 30 vote was even significantly higher. So clearly, we need to have the party embrace the more progressive platform, speak clearly about that, so that the electorate can see that we stand for something. And at the same time, we need to also dedicate greater resources to communities of color and outreach to them at the community level.
Oh, I've got actually two questions and very little time, but let's risk it anyway. I'm so glad that you, of all people at this point, are able to talk with us today. So once again, just thank you for that, and let listeners know that we're speaking with Karen Rinald of the California Democratic Party, the Progressive Caucus. And one of the things that you mentioned, the African American vote, which is the surprisingly disappointing to the Democrats. What about the obvious problem of in various subtle ways, not to mention gerrymandering, African Americans have been prevented from voting in many various sundry ways. This past election was just stellar. It was amazing, the various tactics that were used, as far as I could see, that have been used to prevent African Americans from voting. both sort of physically and also psychologically. What I would say that would be not just African Americans, people of color are prevented from voting, and that seems like one first step that is so that has to be addressed. What have you got a plan for addressing that?
Well, again, we're not the party, and so we don't have the plan. The party needs to come up with that. Though I think it's easy to say that it's an issue, especially when it comes to voter disenfranchisement. That's pretty straightforward, and the party, I would imagine, it's not a great mystery. They know that they have to prioritize that. And so to that extent, that is a kind of a question that's more easily answered than the others. However, for the other part, what we see in survey after survey is actually a lack of interest and a lack, these are voters themselves that are saying things like, that they have come to believe that neither party represents their interests. One of the biggest blocks, the most reliable vote for Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, the African American women, most recently, surveys have been showing a drop in, that kind of reliability. We know that between 2012 and 2016, there was a 7% drop in the African American, turnout. So this speaks to something that goes beyond gerrymandering. This has much, much more to do with feeling as though the party has any relevance in their daily lives, and which then it is about voter enthusiasm. And quite frankly, many people stayed at home.
Thank you. Well, on that note, it's not. It's something that we do have to confront. Thank you so much for that.